Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadikarap, guten tag, ciao, wivi, vakat, bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast, the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget pharmaceutical, vivisection prison, killitary industrial core poor nation, in the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster, bankrupt, corruptocracy, mockracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA. Yes, home of Uncle Sam Manella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts. And the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. I'm distracted by Daisy on my lap, the Chihuahua love of my life who adopted me 2 years ago. She's all excited. The farmer's market is Saturday. She loves cauliflower, especially raw cauliflower. And I am the master of multitasking on Sundays when it comes to preparing for the show, as if I ever am, and cooking up the vegetables that we get at the farmer's market. And a little late getting things going here because the Brussels sprouts came on a stalk this week, and there I was downstairs, picking Brussels sprouts off the stalk, and I'm hearing Pink Floyd coming on, and it's time to go on the air, and this is the first food show, the first food show on the Genesis Communications Network, and I remind myself at times that this is a food show. And I tell you, I'm making Brussels sprouts. And, I adore Daisy, and she is the love of my life. I don't know if I were to come home and she wouldn't be here, I would just lose my mind. And now the international media are covering a story about PETA that is really disturbing. In the past, I've urged Ingrid Newkirk to have PETA stop its killing of dogs and cats in its Virginia shelter, which has about the highest kill rate in the state. And at this point, PETA has killed tens of thousands of dogs and cats, and it hasn't solved the problem. If it hasn't solved the problem, then the killing is merely symbolic. I just don't think it's right for an animal rights organization to directly be killing. It gives ammunition to the enemy. I sat in a meeting, the LA City Council, talking about banning Ringling Brothers Circus, and Ringling Brothers representatives are getting up there saying, hey, PETA kills animals, so what do you care if we're just using a bull hook? It's just not right for an animal rights organization to be killing. That should be left to the, that's the official work of the municipalities. And, I've urged Ingrid to cease that and maybe rededicate PETA to veganism. And now we have this really troubling story that's being covered by the news, including WAVY-TV and the headline. And by the way, if you want to comment on this, do you think it's time that we demand that PETA get out of the animal killing business and maybe, really redirect its efforts toward veganism? This is one of the reasons why I feel there needs to be the World Vegan Summit and Expo, so that we distance ourselves from the policies of organizations that really are not complementary to our thinking at this point. And really, the killing needs to stop. But what's so strange is the headline is Man Claims PETA Stole, Killed Family Pet. So if you want to comment on this, or, you know, also people are saying that PETA should be charged with a felony. It's a felony. Should PETA be charged with a felony? It's so crazy. We're always looking, at animal abusers and want them to be charged with a felony. Well, did PETA commit a felony here? Should PETA be charged with a felony? Do you have an opinion about it? We have a phone number, which is 855-660-4261. 855-660-4261, which is the listener line. And so WAVY-TV says that, and I'm quoting here, Maya the Chihuahua was a comfort to a little girl who moved to the Eastern Shore from Mexico. And the girl's family said the dog had a good life in their Parksley home and was well cared for. They told WAVY.com they can't wrap their heads around why an organization that looks out for animals took the dog from their home. The young girl is now devastated. Quote, she didn't want to go to school. She didn't want to do jobs. She's crying, said the girl's father, Wilbur Cerate. He noticed Maya missing when he got home on one Saturday in October. He said, my Chihuahua, when she sees my car, she comes to me, Cerate said. That Saturday, she did not come. Cerate checked his security camera, and the video shows a van with PETA on the side back into his driveway. Two women got out of the van, and one walked up to his porch, took Maya, and put her in the back of the van. He said, I was angry. I understand they pick up my dog if it was in a tree or another place, but this is in my house, Cerate said. The two women from PETA came back to his house 3 days later, he said. They brought him a fruit basket and terrible news. Maya had been euthanized. They didn't provide Wilbur with any proof, so he called police and thought the women would be held accountable. Accomack County Sheriff Todd Godwin told WAVY.com he charged the PETA workers with larceny. He said pets are considered personal property, but the local Commonwealth's attorney told WAVY.com he dropped the charges because there wasn't enough evidence to prosecute. He said the video does not show criminal intent, so he declined to take the case to court. Now the Cerate family may never get closure, it says in the article here. We didn't have an answer about why, Cerate said. WAVY.com made several attempts to contact PETA to get proof about what happened to Maya and figure out why she was taken. None of our calls were returned. So we went to the company headquarters and we were referred to their Washington, D.C. office. And then it says here, 10 on your side looked into the code of Virginia and learned stealing a dog is a class 5 felony. And then it says here, after our initial report of this story, several viewers said on WAVY's Facebook page that they called the Commonwealth's attorney, the attorney's office, to voice displeasure with his decision. 10 on your side has been working to get more information on the decision from his office, too, but those calls weren't returned either. And so there you have it. If Michael Vick went up to the porch and took a dog and killed the dog, we'd be saying, charge him with a felony, right? So, I don't know. What do you think? 855-660-4261. 855-660-4261. If you want to express an opinion related to this, I think it's really time for PETA to shut down the shelter. And, I know Ingrid Newkirk has a history, long ago being an animal control officer, and, maybe that seemed to be the solution at the time. But now when we have apparently alleged stealing and killing of companion animals, it's time for a change there, right? Don't you think? So we'll see what happens with that. But again, this is really getting international attention, and it's very sad. It's very sad. I have to be against the killing. So, anyway, this is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Oh, our website is back online. You know, for a moment, goveganradio.com was hacked and redirected to a pro-ISIS Arabic website. I think the first clue that it was hacked was, you know, there were more Arabic words than salam, which is in my intro every week. Why would ISIS hack goveganradio.com? People were wondering. I thought, well, maybe it had a website sponsor, you know, maybe it had an advertiser for falafel, maybe, who wanted to expand his audience. I don't know. I think leaders of ISIS were overheard saying of Go Vegan Radio, they were saying, not even eggs, not even yogurt. Wow. And they call us extremists? No, we have to hack this extremist website. Yeah, okay. And of course, Go Vegan Radio is a threat to the goals of ISIS. ISIS basically, you know, on a low budget, you know, just all it seems to have is, U.S. weapons. Its theme is Americans keep eating what you're eating. Americans keep eating what you're eating. That's basically the ISIS message. And ISIS, says like, why do Americans find suicide bombers so strange when everyone in America is on a suicide diet? And, you know, everybody's gets all upset about beheadings, of course. But all Americans are on a diet of the beheaded, right? If you're having, any meat, dairy, fish, eggs. Animals were beheaded, really. So, wow, time flies when you're... it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Coming up on the program, we're going to talk to Surajan Shrestha, talking about a major sacrifice coming in Nepal in November, even bigger than the Thanksgiving sacrifice. Also, Shoshana Castle and Amy Lee Goodman on their new book, The Meaty Truth. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. There are also a couple of Bob Linden pages on Facebook, and I urge you to register now and join us at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. It's coming March 20, 21, and 22 of 2015 at the Marina Del Rey Marriott in Southern California. It is a once-in-a-lifetime event. Check out the website, worldvegansummit.com. You'll see some of the amazing speakers and activities that we have planned. And you can register now. I suggest you do. We are gathering to strategize and figure out how we can create a vegan world and how we can be animal advocates without supporting killing. And I'm asking PETA to stop the killing, to close its shelter, and especially in light of the horrible news this week with the stealing and killing of a companion animal. And we have a call-in number, 855-660-4261. And, you know, for many years, I have complained that speciesism is the only oppression still acceptable to progressives. You know, progressives like their meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. So, you know, that imprisonment, that torture, that massacre is acceptable because it tastes good. I mean, Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Just recently interviewed Ben of Ben and Jerry's about climate change, not realizing that He causes it. So this is a particularly great week to celebrate because Chris Hedges, the renowned progressive journalist, has decided to go vegan. And he wrote about it in Truthdig. Chris Hedges, saving the planet one meal at a time. Welcome, Chris. And he said, Let's talk about what he says about animal agriculture. He says animal agriculture is responsible for more greenhouse gas emissions than all worldwide transportation combined. Is that where I wanted to start? No, I didn't want to start. Okay, I want to start here. He says animal agriculture is the leading cause of species extinction, water pollution, ocean dead zones, and habitat destruction. And with the death spiral of the ecosystem ever more pronounced, becoming vegan is the most important and direct change we can immediately make to save the planet and its species. Chris Hedges, direct quote, okay? Becoming vegan is the most important and direct change we can immediately make to save the planet and its species. It is one that my wife, who was the engine behind our family shift, and I have made. Yay, Chris Hedges goes vegan. He says animal agriculture is responsible for more greenhouse gas emissions than all worldwide transportation combined, cars, trucks, trains, ships, and planes. Livestock and their waste and flatulence account for at least 32,000 million tons of carbon dioxide per year, or 51% of all worldwide greenhouse gas emissions. I know that study from the World Bank environmental scientists. It's at least 51%, not necessarily 51%. Okay. Chris Hedges says livestock causes 65% of all emissions of nitrous oxide, a greenhouse gas 296 times more destructive than carbon dioxide. Crops grown for livestock feed consume 56% of the water used in the United States. 80% of the world's soy crop is fed to animals, and most of the soy is grown on cleared lands that were once rainforests. All this taking place as an estimated 6 million children across the planet die each year from starvation, and as hunger and malnutrition affect an additional 1 billion people. In the United States, 70% of the grain we grow goes to feed livestock raised for consumption. The natural resources used to produce even minimal amounts of animal products are staggering. 1,000 gallons of water to produce 1 gallon of milk. Add to this the massive clear cutting and other destruction of forests, especially in the Amazon, where forest destruction has risen to 91%. And we find ourselves lethally despoiling the lungs of the earth, largely for the benefit of the animal agriculture industry. Our forests, especially our rainforests, absorb carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and exchange it for oxygen. Killing the forests is a death sentence for the planet. Land devoted exclusively to raising livestock now represents 45% of the Earth's land mass. And he goes on, I'll have to invite him on the show. And progressives are saying, oh, this is divisive. Chris, don't be divisive. We want to continue our oppressive ways because it tastes good. No, if you're a progressive, join Chris Hedges. Do the right thing. Go vegan. Hey, check out goveganradio.com. Donate. Support the program. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, and Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. And we do have people coming from all around the globe to the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Please register now. You don't want to miss this. Go to worldvegansummit.com. And Our thanks for support from Vegetarian House Vegan Restaurant in San Jose, 520 East Santa Clara Street. 100% vegan, organic, delicious food there. It's an amazing landmark. You can go to vegetarianhouse.us. And if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, you have an event coming up, a business event, a social event, a wedding, Vegetarian House can cater it and make it really special. Check the menu and get in touch with Vegetarian House. Again, it's vegetarianhouse.us. Well, here we are in November, seems to be the month of massacre. What month, what day isn't massacre? It's an animal massacre every breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's a massacre for Thanksgiving here when 50 million turkeys have to be massacred in gratitude. We find animal massacre festivals that happen around the world, and also in November. One that happens every 5 years, and we'll go to Asia now to talk to Surajan Shrestha about what's happening in Nepal. And am I pronouncing your name correctly, Surajan?
Yeah, it's Surajan Shrestha.
Say it again. Say it.
Surajan Shrestha.
Got it. Okay. And and how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, and it's just about 7:30 a.m. 7:30 a.m. here in the morning, and I just woke up.
And you just woke up. Okay. Well, thanks for not sleeping through the radio show. A lot of people do that.
Yeah.
Or we put a lot of people to sleep. It's hard to say. So, are you in Nepal now?
Yeah, I'm in Nepal now.
Okay. And tell us about the festival that's coming up. I believe it starts on November 28th.
I will give some historical background about this Garimai festival. And it is believed that Garimai festival was originated in 18th century. And if you see the historical background, the history of Garimai festival is related with a feudal landlord whose name was Bhagwan Chaudhary, and a professional village healer in the Hindu religion, whose name was Dukka Kacharya. About 260 years ago, when Bhagwan Chaudhary was imprisoned at Makwanpur prison, he dreamed that his problems would be solved if he made a blood sacrifice to the Garimai. Or if we can say, if he sacrificed an animal. So soon he came out of the prison. Chaudhary took the advice from Kacharya regarding the dream he dreamed of. So according to tradition, when Chaudhary sacrificed an animal, a light appeared in a jar. And since then, the cruel festival has been continuing every 5 years for the last 260 years.
Too bad he remembered his dream.
Yeah, and sad to say, today millions and millions of people come to that Garimai festival from different parts of Nepal and different states of India, hoping for good fortune for them.
It's about 5 million people? 5 million people attend this festival?
Yeah, 5 million people.
And they're expecting good fortune. They to please the god Garimai. Is that the goddess of power? The goddess of power?
Yeah. Garimai is regarded as the goddess of power.
And killing the animals is supposed to end evil, bring prosperity.
Just a superstitious belief that we have to remove, and we are just continuing our campaign to end this.
How many animals are killed for this sacrificial festival?
If we go through the survey of the last years in Garimai in 2009, we can see that about 2 million, 250 million. animals have been killed at that time.
So how many will be killed starting in this November, this month?
At this time, different organizations, I mean, different international organizations and many celebrities like French actress Brigitte Bardot and British actress Joanna Lumley have been raising voice, collaborating with different organizations. And also the local organization based in Nepal are forcing the government not to fund the Garimai festival. So we can say that in this year's festival, we can see a huge improvement regarding the reducement of animals. I mean, there will be checkposts in borders too. So any animals without the proper health checkup license won't be allowed to enter in Nepal for sacrifice.
Mm. So India will close the border, you mean, to not allow animals in for the sacrifice?
Sorry?
That's India closing the border to not allow animals to go for sacrifice? The Indian border?
Yeah, I mean, the border of India and Nepal are free, and anyone can go and come in without any visa. So people were just importing and exporting animals for different purposes. And but at this year's festival, regarding concerns of, regarding the health issue and different violence issues, the campaigners have collaborated with agriculture, animal husbandry, government officials, and made a quarantine check of so that they cannot import and export the animals without checkup.
And this is hundreds of thousands of water buffalo, pigs, goats, chickens, pigeons. Yeah. Are you vegan?
Are you vegan?
Yeah, I'm vegan for now. It has been quite 1.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been vegan because if we see the condition of Nepal, cow is regarded as god. Goddess. And we do not. If the cow is slaughtered in Nepal, then that particular person who slaughtered, who killed the cow is punished, imprisoned, and fined money. It is not good here, but I've seen the slaughterhouse of different Western countries, but it is very bad, I can realize.
Is it easy to be vegan in Nepal?
A
little bit hard, but we cannot find good vegan products, and as a kid, we want to have different chocolates, biscuits, and different other products which are in the market, but we can hardly find the vegan product. I mean, if we go through the strictness, there might have been some milk products suddenly.
Mm. Well, it's we just have to keep pushing for it and having people go vegan and make progress everywhere. So,
but I think my best from my side, and people often tell me, "Oh, Surajan, this is Nepal. You don't have to be that vegan." And but I'm just curious. I can sense the future if Nepal goes through the non-Hindu religious country, I mean secularism, and suddenly there will be eating of cows in few years. I mean, not so nearly, but after few years there will be some that sort of problem may arise that Nepal will be exporting the cows, beef, and so to prevent from that accident, I'm just doing my best from my side.
Okay. That festival, the Garima festival, is Ghimai. And not all Hindus support it, right? I mean, you say it's a Hindu festival, but are there Hindus who oppose it?
Yeah, of course. We all are Hindu here, and we really oppose of it. Many, I mean, this is the issue of compassion, heart. And many people, either they are Buddhist or even Christian or even Islam, and from Hindu, of course, they all offer this sacrifice. I mean, many people, some people from the Islam also go against their Bakr Eid and right. Christian. I mean, yeah.
Right. All religions have sacrifice. It's crazy. You'd think it would be "Thou shalt not kill," and all religions seem to do killing, and they want to end evil by doing evil. You know. I mean, it's
yeah.
Is there a website that you that you're involved with?
Or?
Yeah.
We don't have a website till now because we are just a youth organization, and we don't have that sort of capacity or resource to open that. But another organization in Nepal, whose the name of the organization is Animal Welfare Network Nepal.
Okay.
It has been continuing its campaign on the ground level. And yes, suddenly it have this organization have a website. You can note down if you like. I mean, we can pass it to the different people so they can see and know what really the Garima
is. Okay, great. Well, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for being with us today from Nepal, Sarojan, and keep doing the good work. And thanks for being vegan there.
Okay.
We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and I urge you to register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo, a once-in-a-lifetime experience coming in March. Go to worldvegansummit.com. When you're there, you'll be able to say hi to the folks from Greenlight Meals. They'll have a table there. And wherever you are in the USA, you have no excuse. You can go vegan wherever you are because Greenlight Meals delivers delicious meals right to your door, home or office, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, smoothies, desserts, foods the kids will love. Also available is a nutritional consultation, weight loss consultation from Melissa Bray. So go to the website, greenlightmeals.com. That's green, L-I-T-E, meals.com. Well, my next guests were on the program a few months back talking about their book, Rethink Food, 100-plus Doctors Can't Be Wrong. Of course, many thousands of other doctors can be wrong, but these are the 100-plus smart ones. So, and they're back. They have a new book now. The Meaty Truth, Why Our Food is Destroying Our Health and Environment, and Who is Responsible. So Shoshana Castle and Amy Lee Goodman are the co-authors. Shoshana Castle specializes in raising and structuring capital for the clean technology space, particularly the water sector. And she has been working in global finance. She presides on numerous environmental boards, including the Clinton Climate Initiative. And Shoshana has received her master's degree in environmental management and Water from Staffordshire University. And Amy Lee Goodman is the co-founder of Zibble Incorporated, a company committed to providing delicious vegan foods. And welcome back. How are you, Shoshana and Amy Lee?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for having us back.
Well, thanks for being with us today. And we probably only have a couple of minutes before the break, and then we'll have another couple of segments to talk about your new book. And I was just wondering how you both came to be vegan, though. It looks like around 2005 for both of you.
I think so, yes. Amy, yes. When did you go vegan?
Pretty sure, it's about 2005, so it's been quite a few years now. Shoshana and I met Shoshana when I started on this journey, and we've been going on it ever since. So we actually met and became very passionate about these issues, and this book has been in the making for a while now. Mm-hmm. So we're both very excited. This is really what we're very passionate about.
Yes, and you had a health situation in your family that you saw was addressed by going vegan, and it worked really well, right?
Yes, so the health problem, my sister had arthritis, and she was diagnosed when she was about 7, and the doctors told my family that she would probably be in a wheelchair by the time she was 14. And my mom, being the mother that she is, didn't take no for an answer, and she started searching for solutions. And she came across the China study by Dr. T. Colin Campbell, which says that animal products can actually promote autoimmune conditions. And my mom took my sister off all meat and dairy products, and within 3 months, my sister was completely cured. All of her hot spots is reversed, and this is after she had gone through all the traditional and conventional treatments that arthritic patients are given, such as chemotherapy to dull the pain and Enbrel injections twice a day. And that was a big launching off point for us. But we also watched going vegan also has a really ethical component to it. We watched Meet Your Meat and Earthlings, and once you see those, you really can't go back.
Absolutely.
So that was how my whole family is vegan.
And your whole
so
family all, is vegan.
My whole family is vegan.
Okay.
And we all transitioned after watching those videos and seeing everything that was out there. And I became really passionate and started researching these issues with Shoshana.
Okay, well, hang on. We have to take a break and we'll come back. We'll continue our discussion with Shoshana and Amy Lee about the meaty truth, why our food is destroying our health and environment, and who is responsible. It's Go Vegan Radio at GoVeganRadio.com. Greetings once again. Welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We are nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, and we're live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com, where each program is archived, and you have a link also to the World Vegan Summit at GoVeganRadio.com. We hope to see you there at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Later this hour, Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione, who will define the abolitionist approach at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and also conduct a couple of grassroots vegan workshops there. And you can register now at worldvegansummit.com. Today, we're talking to the co-authors of a new book, The Meaty Truth, Shoshana Castle and Amy Lee Goodman. And it's The Meaty Truth, Why Our Food is Destroying Our Health and Environment, and Who is Responsible. And so, Shoshana and Amy Lee, you say that corporations want to keep us in the dark about what's in our food. So, you know, what's in our food? What are they trying to hide? What is in our food?
Ractopamine. Have you heard of ractopamine? Bob?
No. What's
well,
that?
Well, nobody has heard of ractopamine. It is the main ingredient as a growth additive in pigs. And ractopamine is a toxin that is highly carcinogenic, and it is labeled not for human use, which means we shouldn't be ingesting any amount of this toxin. And over 160 countries, not including the United States, bans ractopamine in foods, including China. But ractopamine is given to pigs that we here in America grow as food to make them leaner and give farmers more bang for the buck. So that's one of the hundreds of ingredients that go into foods that we eat. Arsenic, ammonia, antibiotics, which is causing the antibiotic resistance worry that we are hearing about. The list goes on and on and on and
on. Yeah, I was aware of arsenic. And then these toxins also then are ingested by people. They don't just disappear. If you know, if arsenic is fed to chickens, then people are eating arsenic. And then it's like, oh, I don't feel so good. I wonder what's the problem. You know,
well,
maybe it's the arsenic. You know,
yeah, absolutely. That's just part of that toxic melange composition of everything that's going into the animal tissue, because we ingest the animal tissue, absorb those chemicals. But additionally, a lot of those chemicals, antibiotics and growth hormones, are excreted by these animals. So they go into the manure cesspools, these wide, massive lagoons that frequently spill into our waterways, into our lakes, into our rivers, into our streams, making their way, these toxins making their way into aquifers, into our water, fresh water system that we in turn drink. One of the many reasons why hundreds of thousands of people become sick from food, according to the CDC, every year, related back to foodborne illnesses such as E. coli, Cryptosporidium, Salmonella. That, too, is in the food that we eat. It's Amy, tell Bob about how the USDA allows crap on our foods, literally.
Literally.
So the USDA and the FDA actually are very knowledgeable about this problem. And one of the things that they have actually told Congress when discussing our feces in the meat and it being tainted and trying to deal with salmonella is that if they were to try to eradicate all the salmonella that's on our chicken, which means all the feces that's on our meat, there wouldn't be any chicken to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So people just need to think about that, that it's actually cost them. They say that it's a cost problem, that it's going to cost them and be too expensive for them to eradicate all of these disease-causing bacteria on the food products that people are eating. And yet, it still gets the USDA stamp of approval, which is extremely misleading. Because what most people don't understand is that when they walk into the grocery store and it says USDA approved, there is actually no inspector that has actually looked at that package of meat that you're about to buy. The only thing that the USDA inspects is a plan on paper, which is called the HACCP plan, which is how a facility is going to properly handle and deal with salmonella and everything else. Well, we all know that what happens in theory and what's put into practice are very different. And I think our health showcases this with the ever-increasing amounts of foodborne illnesses that people are being stricken with, as well as the antibiotic resistance that they're getting from it as well.
Right. We've had the ongoing problem with Foster Farms chicken that can't be, you know, it can't be fixed. It can't be eradicated. You can't keep the poop. You know, basically people are eating, well, they're eating a four-letter word that we can't say, you know. Their food is covered with a four-letter word that we can't say right now.
But we can say feces, and literally that is what E. coli is. It kills 5,000 to 10,000 people yearly, hospitalizes 150,000 to 200,000 people. It's eating E. coli, which is another word for crap. But it's a health care cost, so there's that external health care cost that our tax dollars, the health care system, is forced to pay. But additionally, there's the environmental cost as well. So it's deforestation, which occurs because we need to grow. We grow so much soybeans and corn to feed these animals, unnatural foods that their stomachs cannot digest, cannot break down. The massive quantities of pollution that go into the air, into the water, the land, the over-fertilization of land, the runoffs that are causing dead zones. I can go on and on and on.
It's the worst environmental disaster. I mean, it's a nightmare. It's a horror story.
Exactly.
And people put it in their kids' mouths. And, you know, it's like, would you wake up, please? Well, maybe maybe people need to read your disgusting book. Right?
The Meaty Truth is a great book. we do mention that there is the famous Exxon Valdez oil spill, considered the largest environmental spill ever in the history of the United States. Well, we've got something for you. There was a hog crap spill that took place at Ocean View Farms in North Carolina that was double the size of Exxon Valdez, but it wasn't oil. It was manure. It was feces that spilled from the cesspools of lagoons from these animals that, what do you do with all the manure? So these hotbeds of crap went swimming into the rivers downstream and killed tens of millions of fish. I think it was 25 million gallons of manure went spilling into the rivers, lakes, eventually making their way into the ocean. Did we hear about it? Did you hear about it? Probably not.
No. Well, you know, they own the media. They advertise, and they have, the meat industry has financial clout with the media, apparently. You know, I mean, occasionally we see the stories come out. It makes you wonder, though, when there's an E. coli recall or something, how, you know, since it's everywhere, like, it must have really been bad for that one or something, you know? I mean, it's like the very fact that there are any recalls when, you know, the poop is so prevalent everywhere. You know, it's really kind of amazing.
Well, there are thousands of spills.
Well, one of my favorite comments, one of the things that we do include in here is, you know, actual comments that people have made when they've been testifying in these cases. And one of my favorite ones is one of these guys said that because the problem is so prevalent, and I'm paraphrasing here, it's not a problem. Because everybody is doing it, it's not a problem. And that just really goes to show, you know, the type of mentality that they have, that they feel that they can commit these sorts of crimes. We liken it to, you know, seatbelts, that, you know, you can't, it's not the, you know, the person's problem. You can't say, oh, well, nobody's wearing their seatbelt, so it's okay. No, it's actually a really big hazard. And we have to be able to enforce these laws and regulations and really give them some teeth in order to get some changes. We make a comparison to the UK, who has actually made salmonella in meat illegal, and only about 1% of their meat has salmonella in it now, compared in their chickens, compared to 90% in America, because they refuse to make it illegal. So you actually can make really big advances when people understand the problem and they understand the industry. So that's what the meaty truth is.
Then when the toxins are taken out, then there's just the health problem you get from the meat, from eating the chicken, from eating the flesh and the secretions themselves. So on top of how unhealthy they are themselves. And you mentioned that that toxin that's given to pigs in this country that nobody has ever heard, and
ractopamine.
Yes. Okay. So and also
60 countries.
Well, you know, ham or pork and all. I mean, they're all diarrhea fed now, aren't they? If you consider the virus, there's this pig virus epidemic, and the way that they're addressing it is they feed the pigs diarrhea and you know, other pig body parts. So you know,
appetizing.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised. Which goes to show the extent of how big the problem is. They're actually feeding pigs feces, thinking that's going to somehow alleviate the problem. The problem is in eating the pig in the first place. So we don't need protein from a pig. The pig has a nervous system, feels pain and suffering. And these factory farms today are horrendous. The industrialization is a horror machine. These animals have feelings like all of us do, and they are put in the most miserable of any possible condition.
And that's all animal agriculture. It's, you know, I mean, to, you know, saying factory farms and people think that there's such a thing as humane meat, and there certainly isn't. I mean, it's all horrendous suffering and all. So we need to take a break, and we will come back and speak a little more with Shoshana Castle and Amy Lee Goodman. Their book is The Meaty Truth. We will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com and on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Please register for the World Vegan Summit and Expo at worldvegansummit.com. We have a few minutes left to continue our discussion with Shoshana Castle and Amy Lee Goodman. Their new book is The Meaty Truth. They were on the show some months back regarding Rethink Food. And in the You both, I think both of you, are, you have an interest in the water, in water in particular, and the meaty truth about water is meat, dairy, fish, and eggs are a disaster, right? I mean, all the way around.
All the way around. I mean, there are water wars taking place all around the world, but it's really beginning in a very big way in the United States. Over rights for fresh water, but if we're taking our fresh water and we're infiltrating all of these chemicals from penicillin to sodium hyoscyamate acid, sodium nitrates, all the fertilizers that go into growing the foods to feed the animals, and then all these manure spills, we need to pay close attention, folks, to our precious finite resource, water. There's only so much of it, and we're giving more of our fresh water to these animals that we are in turn killing and eating than we are for our own selves. And we don't need the meat to be, lead a healthy life. It's quite the opposite. So eat plants, get your protein from plants, reduce the amount of water usage in the United States, keep the water clean, don't pollute it with the food agribusiness as it relates to growing animals for food.
Going vegan seems to solve everything. You know, eating healthy vegan foods, that's, you know, I've seen figures from the Stockholm International Water Institute that say that, well, a vegan needs 10,000 gallons of water to grow his or her food in a year, and a so-called meat eater needs 320,000 gallons. So each vegan is saving 310,000 gallons of water. And then they estimate a pound of beef requires 8,500 gallons of water. There are different figures, you know, everywhere, but that was a presentation to the United Nations that I found quite amazing. Yet there are people saying that there's such a thing as sustainable meat, which is, you know, nonsense. So, and Amy Lee, you have Zibble. What's Zibble?
So Zibble is a plant-based food company, and we line up with nonprofits. And the whole goal of Zibble is actually to introduce people to eating a healthy, you know, a vegan diet. And we started off actually with cupcakes and frosting, which is not a health food, but it's a way to show people.
Don't tell me that, right? Don't ruin it for me.
It's a way to open people's eyes to the really delicious food that you can have eating vegan. A lot of people think that it's very boring, there aren't any good desserts, you literally have to give up everything good in your life. And food is a big part of our lives, especially in America. And that's one thing that we touch on in the Meaty Truth, is that food is a central component. You know, we celebrate with friends. We go out, and it's something, you know, it's a very big part of the holiday traditions that we have. And one thing that we want to show people is that you can eat delicious food without sacrificing quality, without sacrificing the environment, without sacrificing your health, and you can just feel better about it as well. You know, you'll be healthier, you have so much more energy. And so that's what Zibble was, is really kind of opening the eyes and showing this really interconnectedness between our food, health, and environment. And that's what the Meaty Truth does as well, is we really touch on all the aspects, you know, that food impacts, from our economics to our health to our society. We even talk about how food can take away our freedom of speech in America. These corporations can really infringe on that. So we have delicious recipes in the Meaty Truth as well to get people started and get them on the right path. We didn't want to just give people all these facts and then leave them wondering, now what? Mm-hmm. So at the end of each chapter, we actually have solutions. So everyday action items that anybody can do to get you going on that, on a healthier and more compassionate lifestyle.
Terrific.
And range is better. Just keep in mind that our bodies cannot differentiate between free range and factory farmed meat. So mm-hmm. for the audience.
Right, and grass-fed actually produces more methane, which is harmful to the environment. I guess we are out of time. So I want to thank you, Shoshana Castle and Amy
thank
Lee
you.
Goodman. Is there a website people can visit?
Facebook is Rethink Food, our other book, Rethink Food. Please go on Rethink Food and Rethink Food.
And you can find our book in any bookstore across America.
The Meaty Truth. Thanks for being with us today.
Amazon.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us.
Have
it's Go
time.
Vegan Radio
Thanks
with Bob
so
Linden.
Much.
Thank you, Shoshana and Amy. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at GoVeganRadio. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. A couple of Bob Linden pages. And you can go to the World Vegan Summit and Expo and register now for a once-in-a-lifetime event. Coming up March 20, 21, and 22 in Marina del Rey at the Marriott. You will want to be there. You don't want to miss it. And thanks for support for the Summit and Expo from Nature's Flavors, the website naturesflavors.com. We'll be drinking Nature's Flavors brand Select brand organic coffee and tea. You've seen Select, S-E-E-L-E-C-T, at your natural food stores. Available at Viva La Vegan Grocery in Rancho Cucamonga and Santa Monica. So we'll be drinking Select coffee and tea at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. But check out the website, naturesflavors.com. There may be a lot there that can help you with your holiday cooking. If you want a baking mix and you want to make gluten-free, sugar-free vegan brownies, well, get it from Nature's Flavors, from Select. Birdie and Bill's sodas, natural sodas from Select. And go to the website. It's naturesflavors.com. I said available at Viva La Vegan Grocery. Thousands of products, actually, and they all are vegan. All are vegan. And Viva La Vegan Grocery, Arlo, will be at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. So will the people from Vegans, the vegan grocery chain in Europe. They're coming. It's a global event. Everybody's excited about it. Very excited to see Professor Gary Francione, who will be there and defining the abolitionist approach and conducting a couple of vegan grassroots activist workshops there. And how are you today, Professor Gary Francione? Speaking of,
I'm fine, Bob. And how are you?
Doing great. The Brussels sprouts are almost ready, so nothing makes
good,
me happier.
You know, I thought I would talk this evening about know, Thanksgiving's coming up, and a lot of vegans have a lot of angst about Thanksgiving. And I think it's something to talk about tonight on your show. The first question is, should you go to a Thanksgiving event at which dead animals or animal products are being served? And I don't think that there's a right or wrong answer to that. I mean, any more than there is any other event that you go to that's got animal products.
I mean, I like to make people feel guilty, so I go.
Well, I think...
I'm sorry.
Right, there you go, Bob. You're really undoing what I'm trying to do before I've
okay,
done it.
Okay, sorry.
But, you know, I think that it's important to witness. It's important also to educate and to recognize that most of the people that we deal with, you know, they see the animal issue. They understand the animal issue as raising ethical matters. But people just don't think clearly. I mean, you know, look, I mean, they sit in front of the computer screen for how many hours a day? They watch television. They don't, I mean, critical thinking is sort of gone out the window. I mean, for all of this technology that we have, I actually think that there's less critical thinking now than there was 30 years ago. I mean, I really think that people, I think that, that a lot of this technology has encouraged people to stop thinking. And learning has become entertainment and nothing more. And people really don't want to be challenged. And so I think, you know, you have to deal with the fact that, that most people really just don't think critically. And also, you're dealing with the fact that a lot of people still believe that eating animal products is necessary for health. It's shocking, really, to find people, you know, you would think that, you know, they would be living under rocks if they had these views. But, I mean, nevertheless, a lot of people really do believe that they need to eat animal products to be optimally healthy. So, so you've got to deal with that. And you know, which is one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why I tell people who want to be abolitionist vegan advocates, you need to educate yourself before you can educate other people. You need to know things. You need to be able to discuss theory, at least on a basic level, and you need to know some facts before you go out and try to change the world. And so I think, you know, an important thing to do is to be prepared to discuss with people the health issue. But let's talk about actually when you get to that Thanksgiving event, what ought you to do? I think that one of the most important things to recognize is that Thanksgiving, of all of the days of the year, is the most food obsessed. You know, it's the most food obsessed day of the year. I mean, everybody's focused on food. I mean, it's almost bizarre. Mm-hmm. You know, and particularly
it's,
once you're
it's
not
a festival of gluttony. Really,
yeah, really. Once you're not into that anymore, it really. You know, I remember Thanksgiving when I was a child, and it was a big event, and you know, and it was something that we all looked forward to, and it was a wonderful family time, etc. And then as I got older, and I started thinking a little more clearly about these things and became a vegan, I started seeing Thanksgiving as what you just said, you know, a celebration of gluttony, of excess, overeating, and just horror. It's just horrible. But a real sort of food obsession, or expressing a real food obsession. And I think that you know, you've got to realize that. Going into this, you've got to realize that you've got a bunch of people who have one thing on their minds, and that is eating. And they're also thinking about eating a dead bird and a bunch of other things that are made from a bunch of other products.
It's called Turkey Day now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's even replaced.
It was actually that may be a more popular name, but I remember hearing that when I was a child. You know, that they, you know, like, what are you doing for Turkey Day? I mean, it was that's been around for a while, and so it's a day in which we focus on food, and there's a real obsession with food. So you've got to realize, you know, that's probably the worst day of the year to be having this discussion with anybody. But nevertheless, you know, you got a bunch of omnivores there. Educate. I think it's really important, both at Thanksgiving and every other time of the year, when you're talking with people about this, particularly when they're near the food that they want to consume, that you make it clear that you're not judging them. This is not a matter of your saying, I think you're a bad person. You are taking a moral position about something, and it's important to distinguish between judging others and judging conduct, and making it clear that, look, you know, you're not there to judge them, but you are a vegan because you've made a moral judgment that consuming animal products is something that can't be justified. And that it's not just an opinion on your part, like whether you like one television show as opposed to another television show or one sort of music as opposed to another sort of music. That's a common thing. People say, well, you know, it's your opinion. That's your opinion. Yeah, well, it's not an opinion. Aesthetic matters are matters of opinion. Where you like to go for vacation is a matter of opinion. But violating or not violating the fundamental rights of others is not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of basic morality. And so I think it's really important to make it, you know, to make those two things clear. A, you are not judging them. But B, you're also not expressing a mere preference or a mere opinion, but rather your views, and the reason why you're not eating the things that they're eating is because you have made the judgment that we cannot justify exploiting non-human animals. And, you know, and so I think it's really, you know, because a lot of people, you know, a lot of people think that, well, you know, vegans are judgmental and they're judging me as a bad person. And I think it's important to realize, you know, although we all, you know, those of us who are vegans, we all agree that the behavior is wrong, that we cannot justify animal exploitation. But we all have to remember we were once, most of us were, once not vegan. And so, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, once I became aware of the issues, I made the right decision, and I would like to think that other people would do that as well. But it's really not the point of it is not to say you're a bad person. Hey, grandma, you know, you're a bad person. You're as bad as, you know, you're evil because you've made that turkey. What she's done is wrong, and she shouldn't have done it. But, you know, does that mean that, you know, that we have to start judging grandma and making it, you know, and taking the position that, you know, she's some sort of, you know, moral eunuch? And I think that's really not, and I really do, I think it's a general matter, whether it's Thanksgiving or any other time of the year, we've really got to distinguish between individuals and actions. None of us is really in a position to make moral judgments about other people because we don't really know how they think and how they've come to their conclusions, and it's really not a good idea to judge them anyway. It is absolutely essential. Morality absolutely demands that we make moral judgments and that we make them clearly and unequivocally, and if something is wrong, we advocate not doing it. And we, you know, and we must be clear about that, that there's a moral obligation not to exploit non-human animals. And so I think, you know, and, you know, another thing that I think is really important is try to sort of talk to people with concepts that are familiar to them. So, for example, if somebody says, you know, if somebody expresses some interest to you in talking about this as you're having this, as you're trying to have this discussion, somebody expresses some interest, you know, try to talk to that person on that person's level. For example, you know, if you know whether that person has a dog or a cat or some other non-human companion that is very meaningful in her or his life, talk about that. Talk about the fact that, you know, that we love animals, that we all love animals. I mean, I'm sure that when most people, most vegans are with their non-vegan family and friends, those people are also going to be, or at least many of them, are going to be people who have relationships or have had relationships with non-human animals and who love non-human animals on one level. They just haven't sort of thought through that loving means not killing others. But it's really important to sort of make it clear that, look, there's no moral difference between the animals that we love and those that we stick forks into. That it's completely arbitrary. That there's no difference. You know, that there's no difference between the dog that you love or the cat that you love, and the bird on that the bird on the table, or whatever other that animal products are around. And it's important to try to get people to sort of see that. You know, I mean, I think it's always a bad idea to try to start having a philosophical discussion when people are, you know, in that sort of context. I think it's really a bad idea to try to have a theoretical discussion, particularly one that you're having when you're a little bit agitated and angry and maybe feeling resentful because you feel that people aren't being respectful of your moral views. And so I think it's really, really important to sort of have some simple concepts that can grab people very quickly so that you can have a productive discussion and not one that's going to degenerate.
We have to take a break. We will continue with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. Register now, WorldVeganSummit.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, where you can make a tax-deductible donation to support the program and not put it in the direction of the larger groups who will only harm animals with your donation. Crazy week with PETA also. We're talking to Professor Gary Francione, his animal rights segment, every week at this time on the program. And we're talking about Thanksgiving, which I think has been one of the biggest days of family conflict for vegans, you know, for a long time. I mean, I know a lot of people who I used to promote, I used to organize vegan Thanksgiving events, and people were thrilled to come to that as an alternative. But a lot of people say, oh, I have to go, you know, to the family. And I know that, how can grandma not take it that we're saying, like, she's not a good person, you know, for making the turkey after we've said we feel that, you know, we have a moral obligation not to do harm to other living beings. How does grandma not take it that way? Like, my little grandson who used to want the drumstick from me, you know, now, you know, I mean, is that not a natural reaction from family members? Isn't that what creates a lot of this conflict all the time? It's like, how you get past that?
Say, look, this is not a matter of judging you. This is a matter of, I've come to a moral conclusion. Let me share with you why I've come to that moral conclusion and talk about it with them. And, you know, and look, I think I've observed lots of reactions. In the 32 years I've been a vegan, I've watched lots of vegans reacting with lots of non-vegans. And the characteristic, I think, that typifies most of these interactions is lack of, you know, is people not remaining calm and not recognizing that when you are promoting, when you're promoting this idea, it's threatening to a lot of people for lots of reasons. And, you know, some of which are conscious, some of which probably aren't conscious, but family situations, family relationships are always complicated, but by things that you're not discussing at that time. But I think it's really, really important to remain calm when you're having this discussion. And if somebody says something like, you know, what about plants? Or, you know, what about, you know, if somebody says something sarcastic, as I've said before, you know, the more absurd the thing they say is, the more likely it is that you're touching a nerve, and that's an invitation to you know, that's somebody who really wants to know more but can't figure out a way to sort of engage you in a better way. So if somebody says something that you don't hear or you think is not being respectful of your views, obviously don't, you know, I mean, you know, the people should relate to each other in a civil way, but don't whatever you do, fly off the handle, become impatient, you know, just keep calm and keep reiterating that this is not about judging you. This is about a moral conclusion I've come to. Let me tell you how I've gotten there, why I feel this way, why I believe what I believe. And another thing to do, just a practical thing to do, is bring a vegan cake. You know, either make one yourself or get one. You know, or something like that. You know, bring some like, you know, irresistible, like, you know, quadruple chocolate vegan cake or something that people will just like go wild over. You know, food activism is really very important.
Sure.
And the more, you know, like, and if you're bringing vegan food to this event, you know, bring more so that you can share it with people, so that people can see really how excellent vegan food is. But, you know, remember, I do think it's, you know, one of the things that is becoming clearer to me, and it's sort of surprising, but I think it's true, and that is a lot of people, it's 2014, and you think that, you know, people would know better, but a lot of people still really do believe that if you don't eat animal products, you know, you're not going to be experiencing optimal health. And, you know, and I think it's important. You know, I basically have almost memorized, you know, statements from the Mayo Clinic and from the American Dietetic Association and from all of the various medical associations. I can almost repeat them.
And every week there's more. Every week there's another study to add to it, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, and I basically, as I said, I've got these things almost memorized, and I sort of, like, recycle.
Where's the time is flying? I don't know. Really? Is that it? We're done?
We're having such a good time.
We're having such a good time. Oh, well. We'll have to have another good time next week. Same time. Same place.
World Vegan Summit. See you all there.
See you there. WorldVeganSummit.com. Register now.